Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. Hello Fresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. Hello Fresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at hellofresh.com.
Join us for a journey as we go back to the great civilizations of the past. Who were the people? What were they like? How did they begin? And how did they end? Let's find out on the 650s BC, Part 2.
Whoa, let's do this.
Yes, hello again, Dan. And I'm Bernie.
And we are the fans of history.
Yes, we are.
I want to remind you listeners about our Patreon, because we are considering coming out every other week. I asked you the question, Bernie, but at this time of this recording, you have not replied. But I would love to see this podcast come out every other week. But that will be a lot of work. So please encourage us by becoming patrons at patreon.com. Search for Fan of History. Thank you.
Yes. So, yeah, sorry, I thought I did reply. But yeah, so I think we can do it. As long as I keep, you know, doing the research quick and we get them edited, I think we can do it.
All right, let's do it. What about 657 BC?
Yeah, so in 657... Cypselus. He becomes the first tyrant of Corinth. And I was working on this just before we started recording, and this turned out to be a really cool story. And I originally learned about this from our friend Ryan Stitt's podcast, The History of Ancient Greece, and that came from episode 16, The Age of Tyranny. We could post that on the episode notes. So I re-listened to that a few times, and I used it for the research, and that, and also Herodotus. So I'll go through this story for you guys.
Yeah, shout out to Ryan for a great podcast, The History of Ancient Greece.
Yeah, I do use it for reference for things, and he's very it's a very informative podcast. And Ryan's a good guy too. He's the kind of guy who gets, you know, he communicates with you and stuff. I really like that guy.
Yeah, he's great.
Yeah. So, so the historians, they place the age of tyranny in Greece from 675 to 510 BC. So we remember the first time we heard the word tyrant comes from the poet Achillicus, and that was in reference to my friend Gyges.
Gyges, we talked about the original tyrant.
He was the original tyrant. Oh, boy.
I was a tyrant before it was cool.
He was. So... Well, here's the story of this other tyrant, Cypselus. So at the time in Corinth, they had a ruling family called the Bacchiadi. And they had kings before, but this was the ruling family. So they intermarried, and you had to be part of the Bacchiadi to be part of the ruling class.
Yeah.
And this next part's a little mythical part. So there was a Bacchiadi named Amphion, And he had a lame daughter named Labda. I mean, so none of the Bacchiati would marry her, because we know Greeks, they always have something against people who are lame. So she was married to a man named Edion, who was an outsider from the township of Petra. So it's not like real far away, but it's not, you know, Corinth proper in that city.
It's Petra, Greece, and not Petra in the Jordan.
Yeah, no, it's right there. It's just, you know, it's just sort of like a suburb. So it turns out there was an old oracle and a new oracle, this is why they had to put them together after this all happened, that said that a child of Edion would be the end to the Bacchiati. So when a son was born of this, you know, this new marriage, the Bacchiati sent 10 men out to kill the baby.
Oh, no.
Yeah. So then there was a big star and three wise men and...
Wait a minute.
This is familiar. This sounds familiar, right? Like, put the baby in a basket. Nope, that's a different story. All right, sorry. So anyway, these guys, they go to the home of Labda, and they ask to see the child. And she doesn't know anything about this plan. So she just comes out and says, oh, sure, here's one. Look at the baby. Hands it to one of the guys. And the plan was that the first guy to get the baby should immediately throw it to the ground and kill it. How's like that for a job? So the guy gets the infant, and the baby smiles at him. So he gets cold feet, and he's just, and he hands, oh, cute baby, and he hands it to the next guy. And then the baby smiles at the next guy, and he passes him on. So this happens to all 10 guys. They all, like, see this cute baby, and he smiles at them, so they can't do it. So they give the baby back to the mother, and she goes back inside. And then there's, you know, they start talking and arguing with each other outside the door, saying what a bunch of babies they are, wimps and stuff like that. So they said, all right, let's get the baby back and we're going to do it. So, but the mom heard them talking because she was close to the door. So she quick hid the child in a chest. And so when they came back to the door, she was hidden in the chest. The baby was hidden in the chest. So they just couldn't find him. So they just went home and said, all right, let's just say that we did it. Again, like Moses, right? Oh, yeah, we took care of him, and then he went down in a basket. So after that, the child was called Cypselus after that chest. I'm not sure if Cypselus means chest or if Cypselus is the type of chest, but that's why his name is Cypselus, because he was in it.
If someone knows ancient Greece, let us know.
Yeah. So obviously, Cypselus was charming, right? Because even as a baby, he was charming these guys that were going to kill him. He's a good politician.
Yep.
When Cypselus grew up, he fulfilled the policy and he overthrew the Bacchiati. So at the time, Corinth was involved in wars with Argos and Corcyra, and the Corinthians were unhappy with the rulers. And if you remember, back in 664, we knew there was a naval battle between Corinth and Corcyra.
Yeah.
So there was... Oh, sorry, Dan.
Yes.
Yeah, so there was, you know, they were unhappy. There was cities growing, and this was the age of tyrants. And we do remember Phidon was involved in something in Corinth around this time, too. And Phidon was a tyrant. So kind of like today when you have a guy like Mr. Trump, you know, and other people sort of copy him.
Tyranny is on the rise.
Yeah. So at this time, 657, Cypselus, he was the polymarch, which is the archon in charge of the military. So he used his influence with the army and the navy to expel the Bacchiati. And they say he also expelled his other enemies, but he did allow them to set up colonies in northwestern Greece.
There was in northwestern Greece?
Yeah, we have a colony northwestern. No, that's east. Yeah, we have a colony in Thrace and coming up in the 650s.
Oh.
I think the world was pretty thinly populated. There's probably some spots to go everywhere.
But I mean that they were sort of overpopulated in the 9th century BC and went to all over the Mediterranean, but they didn't want to go to northwest Greece. What does that say about northwestern Greece? They rather Marseille or Italy.
Maybe that was like sending them to Alaska.
Yeah, maybe it was.
Like, okay, you want to? Here's your choice. You die or go to this place in northwestern Greece.
Yeah, probably.
They actually did. He increases the trade in the colonies in Italy and Sicily. But, you know, maybe they said they were going to northwestern Greece, but then they really went to Italy. Because this is cool. There's a guy named Demaratus. He was one of the exiled Bacchiati. He fled to Italy, and he settled in the Etruscan city of Tarquini. And there he introduced a lot of aspects of Greek culture to central Italy. And his son Lucius would move to Rome and become king.
Is that Tarquini. Tolkien the Great?
Yeah.
Well, this seems like an after construction. But we will bring in Rome with him at the wheel in 616 BC.
And so see how it's all connected? It just, everything just went to little stories that sort of connect.
I think that Greek influence on the Etruscans started much earlier than this.
I'm sure there's a lot of trading going on back and forth. Maybe this guy moving there and just, maybe, the, you know.
He became the poster boy for Greek influence on the Etruscans.
Right. And when they say they move, I think we have to realize today when somebody like Demaratus moved to central Greece, it wasn't like him and his wife moved there. I think it's sort of like the story of Abraham in the Bible. You know, they had a lot of people moved. It's sort of a leader of a whole bunch of people. Has a lot of servants, slaves, friends. You know, sort of like a whole community moved there.
Yeah.
Not just like one guy putting a statue in front of his house. Oh, I like that guy's statue. Sort of like a whole community. Hmm. And how they act. And, I mean, Greek culture is definitely attractive.
So this is the origin of the Tarquins.
That's
interesting.
Right? I thought so.
Huh.
That's super.
Did not expect that.
I know.
One size fits all seems like a good idea for clothes until you try them on. Same goes for healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. Learn more at uh1.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Time for some sports.
Yeah, let's go on to sports. 656 is the 31st Olympics. You want to talk about it? You want me to talk about it?
Talk about it.
I will. Chionis of Sparta. I mentioned him in the 660s because he won back then. So he, again, wins the Daidalos and the Stadion. And I think Chionis of Sparta is a cool name, right? Like Chionis of Sparta. A lot better than Bernie of Scranton.
But if Bernie of Scranton won the Olympics twice, then it would be a cool name.
I guess if I did, yes.
Yes, Dan of Stockholm, that's not so cool.
Not too bad. Dan of Stockholm. Wasn't there one Scott of the Dead, Dan of the Dead, that movie?
There was. So this Chionis was winning running, he was long jumping and triple jumping?
Yep. Wow. He in 656, he broke the long jump record with a jump of 7 meters and 5 centimeters, which is a little over 23 feet. And that would have won him the event in the first modern Olympics in 1896. But that jump. And he would have still been in the top eight all the way through the 1952 Olympics in Helsinki.
Whoa.
Yeah, so this guy was quite an athlete. And this is before performance-enhancing drugs. Right? And his triple jump record was 15.85 meters, which is about 52 feet.
Wow.
So here's the big record, though, is that he won the Diolos and the Stadion 3 years in a row. So he had a three-peat, 664, 660, and 656.
He was on top of his game for a decade.
Yeah, right? Oh, my God, it just reminds me. We went back to boxing. We're just boxing outside, you know, mostly doing conditioning. And 2 days ago, we did sprints. So 52-year-old guy racing against a 13-year-old kid. And actually beat him five times. But I am in agony.
You won't manage that in 3 years.
Oh, my God, yeah. I'm not going to be able to. Wait, 3 years? You think at 55 I'm not going to be able to run anymore? Is that a challenge?
I think he will improve.
Oh, the kid will improve. Yes, he sure will. Ah, correct. But how cool is it, though? This record was not matched again until 480 by Astolos of Syracuse. And this Astolos guy, he also won something called the Hoplatodromos, which was a race done in armor.
What?
Yeah.
That sounds like something you wouldn't want to do.
No. We had a guy, we had a half marathon last year, and we had a fireman run the whole 13 miles in his suit.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, why? That was really hot. He was really hard to do.
I bet.
Yeah. So imagine. So this record. So he held this record from, and nobody really beat it because he just tied it. Nobody really beat it, did it four times in a row. So he held the record for 176 years in the biggest sporting event of the time.
But that's amazing. Being the best athlete for two centuries.
Right.
Crazy. Kyonis of Sparta, we salute you.
Seriously. We do. I mean, I might get a poster of him.
I imagine that's not going to happen today. That a record stands for 176 years.
176 years, could you imagine?
That'll be a record from 1844.
Right, that's how amazing that would be. Well, you know what? Here's a similar thing, sort of, in American football. The Miami Dolphins went undefeated in the 1970 season, and it's not been repeated. So that's 50 years.
That's a long time.
Yeah, that is. It's kind of like that, you know? Like, that's how big of a record this was. It was just, you figure this guy was on people's name was on people's lips for 176 years.
Remember when Kaunas of Sparta ruled all the sporting events?
Right.
Wow. Okay, let's go to Egypt.
Yes.
And Psammetichus, who is taking control over all of Egypt. He reunified Egypt in his ninth regnal year, when he dispatched a powerful naval fleet in March 656 BC to Thebes and compelled the existing god's wife of Amun at Thebes to adopt his daughter Nitocris I as her heiress. The god's wife of Amun was Shepinupep II. She was the daughter of Pi. Psammetichus' victory. They even put up a stele for this adoption so that Pi's family could not get out of it and that Psammetichus' dynasty would rule Thebes. Psammetichus' victory destroyed the last remnants of the Nubian 25th dynasty's control over Upper Egypt under Tantami, since Thebes now accepted his authority. This daughter of... This daughter of Psammetichus, Nitocris, would hold this office for 70 years. How old was she when she started?
Must have been not much, you know, not very old.
No, she was the god's wife of Amun between 656 BC until her death in 585 BC.
Well, I mean, she's 5 years old, 10 years old. How old could she be?
Wow. The adoption stele was unearthed in 1897 by Georges Legrain at Karnak and moved to the Cairo Museum. It is made from red granite and measures roughly 6 feet in height and 4.5 feet in width. The beginning of the inscription is lost, but the remainder continues with an inscription relating that Semeticus is reporting to the court his intention to give his daughter to Amun to be the god's wife. Semeticus acknowledged that the current god's wife, Shepenupep II, daughter of Pharaoh Pi of the 25th dynasty, already had an heir in Taharqa's daughter, Amenirdis II, who was officiating as divine adoratrice of Amun. That was the heir of the god's wife, was the divine adoratrice.
Okay.
Semeticus intended to compel Shepenupep to adopt Nitocris as her heir, thus replacing Amenirdis II in the succession. The court thought this was great, and in his ninth regnal year, first month of the first season, day 28, which comes out to March 2nd, 656 BC, Nitocris departed from Sais to Thebes on a royal flotilla, led by the admiral and nomarch of Heracleopolis Magna, whose name was... Hang on, I can do this. The name of the admiral and nomarch of Heracleopolis Magna was... Sematavytefnacht. Or, as we call him, Semi.
Oh, good.
After 16 days, the flotilla reached Thebes, whose population acclaimed the arrival of the princess. Both Shepenupep II and Amenirdis II met Nitocris. She was adopted formally, and both agreed to convey their properties to her, and indirectly then to Semeticus. Then the Stela reports a very detailed list with all the daily donations, mainly food, to Nitocris from several officials. So from this guy, you get a couple of hamburgers, and from this guy, you get a pizza. Nitocris is like, oh, I'm going to get so fat.
Yeah, so that's it for the Nubians. For that's the final nail in their coffin, right?
They have been hanging on for a long time.
Yeah. But, this is to make Egypt great again.
Yes. And it's interesting to see how Semeticus comes out on top here, just betting on the right horse.
Yeah.
And then he has both the help of Ashurbanipal and of Gaius. Yeah. That's well played.
Yeah, you have to say, yeah, Semeticus was probably, it could have went a lot of other ways. He probably, well played is the way to put it. He probably played all his cards correctly.
It's like at the start of the conflict you had the Assyrians and the Nubians, but the winner is Semeticus.
His father was taken to Nineveh. So he's got good genes. I mean, he got taken to Nineveh and got back.
Yeah, this dynasty is promising.
Yeah, for sure. He was very into the Greeks. He was like a Greekophile, you know, and I think that was helpful for them too. He seemed to be intellectual. We have this experiment of Semeticus, and this is discussed in psychology things today. It's kind of a cool little story. We don't know when it took place, but it definitely took place during the rule of Semeticus.
Yep.
And I could tell you the story. It comes from Herodotus.
Please do.
Want to hear it?
Yes.
All right, here we go. The experiment of Semeticus. This is from Herodotus. Now, the Egyptians, before the reign of their king Semeticus, believed themselves to be the most ancient of mankind. Since Semeticus, however, made an attempt to discover who were actually the primitive race, they have been of the opinion that while they surpass all other nations, the Phrygians surpassed them in antiquity. This king, finding it impossible to make out by dint of inquiry what men were the most ancient, contrived the following method of discovery. He took two children of the common sort and gave them over to a herdsman to bring up at his folds, strictly charging him to let no one utter a word in their presence, but to keep them in a sequestered cottage. See that they got their fill of milk, and in all other respects look after them. His object therein was to know, after the indistinct babblings of infancy were over, what word they would first articulate. The herdsman obeyed his orders for 2 years, and, at the end of that time, on his one day opening the door of their room and going in, the children both ran up to him with outstretched arms and distinctly said, Beccles. When this first happened, the herdsman took no notice, but afterwards, when he observed, on coming often to see after them, that the word was constantly in their mouths, he informed his lord, and by his command brought the children into his presence. Semiticus then himself heard them say the word, upon which he proceeded to make inquiry what people there was who called anything Beccles. And hereupon he learnt that Beccles was the Phrygian name for bread. In consideration of this circumstance, the Egyptians yielded their claims and admitted the greater antiquity of the Phrygians.
Wow. That is so stupid.
Right? That's how people did it.
Yeah, but the Phrygians were not that ancient at all.
No, I mean, it does make me think, why did they think they were ancient? Like, you know, like Catahoulic and all those old, and Göbekli Tepe, like they're kind of in Phrygia.
Do you know why they thought the Phrygians were old?
Why?
Because Gyges.
Yes.
Yes.
It's all about Gyges.
Yeah, he told them, this place is really old.
Oh, you're right. He probably is the one who told them that.
Yeah, it's like, we've been around for 10,000 years at least.
Yeah.
I promise you.
I mean, of course, we know everybody came out of Africa, so they must have stopped at Egypt first.
Yeah.
In my opinion.
Actually, there's been a lot of work done in the last few years with DNA to track the human exodus from Africa. It's super interesting.
But, yeah. Have you done it?
No, I haven't.
But, I did it years ago. Well, it was a while now. I did the National Geographic.
Okay.
You pay for it, but they're trying to do a study, and they did, you know, track out of Africa, so it tells me where I came out of Africa and all that.
Okay, back to the 650s.
To the 650s. Yeah, so that's this experiment was tried by other rulers later in history, and there's one, the best known is Emperor Frederick II. From 1194 to 1250, and all the children died from not talking to them.
That's Barbarossa, right?
Yeah.
The guy who died on Crusade.
Okay, yeah, you're right.
He was like the biggest warrior king of Europe, and he was like, I'm going to go on a crusade. It's going to be great. And then he fell into a river and died on the way to the crusade. So it was a big disappointment.
Apparently. Maybe the children were waiting for him.
He couldn't do this children experiment. So Semiticus also searched for the source of the Nile, right?
Oh yeah, he did. He did search for the source of the Nile. He they thought that they didn't think it was the way we think of it, coming from a mountain or something. They thought there was a fountain or a spring underwater.
Wouldn't that be great?
Yeah.
So where would the water come from for this enormous spring, for this giant river?
They went to a place where they, you know, it was rumored that it came from, and it was very deep. And they brought they dropped a really deep, you know, rope with some stuff on it. And they didn't, you know, they weren't sure or anything that was it. I don't know how dropping that would tell them. I guess maybe they thought it was a big hole to the center of the world.
I'm just happy they didn't use children to
put it. Yeah, I know, right? Let's go swim down there and see.
Wow.
So he was kind of a scientist, you know? He was sort of trying to do his thing. Well, like Mengele, but...
Poor... I wish he had come after the... After Aristotle, so he could get some scientific principles.
Yeah. True that. So, that's all I got on Semiticus right now. But he's going to be around for a while.
Oh, good. Maybe we'll get some more crazy experiments.
Yeah, yeah, and we know that his offspring, you know, they do that circumvent Africa deal.
Oh.
Yeah, because that's Necho II. I think that's his son or his grandson. It's either Semiticus' son or grandson, or it could be Semiticus II. But it's definitely this line of pharaohs, this family. Yeah, so they're definitely, you know, I think the introduction of the Greeks to Egypt introduced them to some more, you know, scientific type of thing. He's from the Delta, you know.
Yeah, and he has almost no real recollection of what Egyptian pharaohs do, because there have been no Egyptian pharaohs for so long.
Right. That's amazing to think about how history could change. You know, like there's these traditions for 1,000 years, and then you get 100-and-some-year bump in between, and then just the memory's different, and then sort of just starts anew.
Yeah, this bump is like 350 years since the last Egyptian dynasty was on the throne.
That's a long time. That's longer than the United States has been a country.
Yeah.
So, doing the research, and there was a thing came up that it said 655 BC, the wall of Ashur was rebuilt.
Yeah, I think that's typical Ashurbanipal Assyrian king behavior, that let's rebuild something, the wall of Ashur, that's important. So he rebuilt that and put his stamp all over it and said, I made this wall new. I made this wall great again.
Yeah. I mean, I guess it's good that they did. You would think, and we'll find out later, but I mean, the Assyrians, they're not used to getting attacked. So they...
It's been a long time since anybody besieged Ashur, but it will happen.
Yeah, like everybody. I think we could squeeze one more in this episode, one more event.
Okay.
Which is the a colony in Thrace called Abdera was founded, which... Traditional date being 654 BC, a Greek colony.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah. Founded by colonists from Clazomenae, which is an Ionian Greek city. And today it is the town of Erla in modern day Turkey. So I was able to do my little deal where I could find out how far it was. So if you could go overland. It's about 400 miles, 649 kilometers or 403 miles on an overland route. But it's definitely a sea route. And so today it would take you about 8 hours, 8.5 hours by car.
Yeah.
So by ship, it's about the same distance, 400 miles by sea. So, I mean, even if you can only go 25 miles a day, it would probably take about 16 days to get there.
Huh.
Not real far. It's in Thrace, which is in the most hospitable place. You know, there's tribes and people there. So it didn't really last long. But the Phoenicians apparently had a settlement there before the 650s. And they says that the town long maintained Phoenician standards in its coinage.
Phoenician colonies were very different from the Greeks.
Yeah, they must have been.
They were mostly trading stations, sort of like the Portuguese when they... In the 15th century or the 16th century, they just set up trade bases and don't really intend to sort of conquer the land, but just do trading.
So that would be like the Portuguese would be like the Phoenicians and the Greeks would be kind of like the British.
Something like that.
Yeah.
Or the Spanish.
Yeah, Spanish settled too, true. So according to Herodotus, the leader of this colony was a guy named Timesios. But within one generation, the Thracians had expelled the colonists. Plutarch says that Timesios became too much to bear for his colonists because of his desire to do everything by himself. So apparently he was like a micromanager. And one of the children, the next generation of the colonists, let him know how they felt. He quit in disgust.
So we had a working Phoenician colony there at some point. They were fine with the Thracians, trading and stuff. And then this guy comes along, set up a Greek colony. Then he rage quits and leaves his colony. And the Thracians are like, hey, we're fed up with those guys. Let's drive them into the sea.
Yeah, maybe do some human sacrifices or something.
I think the Thracians are pretty used to these people along their coast.
Yeah. So I think that'll cover us for this episode. We still got a lot in the 650s, though.
Yeah, let's do more episodes.
Let's do it, because we're coming up to the biggest event of the 650s. It's coming, I promise.
Oh, now you got me excited. What is it?
I can't tell you. You have to tune in next time.
No. Speak to you next time.
Okay, bye, Dan.
Bye-bye.
If you enjoyed this podcast, please consider supporting us on Patreon, patreon.com/fanofhistory. Just $1 an episode would help us out. Thanks, and see you next time.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.